Howdy and welcome to River Talk, a podcast hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weisseth. This week, our big topic, or rather our guest, is Pete Rockwell from AIR. But before we get to that, we usually like to start with news of the week. So Priscilla, Zach, what do you have?
All right. Just have a quick little news of the week as a follow-up to last week's news. So American Whitewater did launch their easy-to-fill-out form to nominate Wild and Scenic Rivers in Oregon. If you have the capacity or you would like to write a more personalized letter into the Wyden email that's listed on the American Whitewater website, these are the rivers that we have identified that have unique whitewater value in Oregon that need additional protection. So there are a number of tributaries to the Illinois River, one of which is Silver Creek. There's a segment that still needs some protecting. There's Lawson Creek, and there's a couple of creeks that I've not yet paddled that would like to, and I know Zach wants to as well, like Indigo Creek and Collier Creek. We have North Umpqua and tributaries, South Umpqua and tributaries, Celestial Falls, which if that segment was protected, the entirety of the White River would be protected, which would be awesome. Williamson River, the Blue River, the Upper Rogue, Middle Fork, and South Fork, Brighton Bush River, Quartzville Creek, North Fork Smith in the segment that's in Oregon, and the South Fork Chetco River, Hunter Creek, and Pistol River. So we'll post these up on the website as well, but if any of those creeks or areas are of particular importance to you, I'd encourage writing in a personalized letter, sending in why it's important to you, why it needs protecting, and maybe even a few photos for them to look at.
Yeah, and the North Fork of the Smith is protected as a National Wild and Scenic River. I think it's the tributaries, specifically Baldface Creek and Chrome Creek.
Right, yes, sorry. Yes, the tributaries to the North Fork Smith. So a lot of the, thanks for pointing that out, Zach, a lot of the efforts that we're putting into this over at AW is protecting important tributaries to some popular whitewater runs, because as most of us know, if the tributaries aren't protected, then that sometimes impacts the quality of the recreation experience on the larger streams.
And a great example, the Illinois is the one on this whole project I personally the most passionate about, because I love that river and we do trips there. And there's a bunch of tributaries upstream of the Illinois put in. So like Josephine Creek, Rough and Ready Creek, Sucker Creek, a whole bunch of tributaries that are in this bill, the West Fork of the Illinois, that would get protection. And if they weren't protected, you know, they could be mined and the water quality could go down, or the quality of the run could be affected. So I'm a huge advocate for protecting this Upper Illinois watershed.
Great. Was there any more news from either of you?
Couple things. Just, you know, for those that aren't in Idaho, one of the big things from a boating community standpoint that we're seeing up here is, it was last week, a week before, it was announced that fishing for steelhead is shut down. Basically, there's going to be no steelhead season on the Clearwater or on the Snake below, I believe, Assotin. I don't know the Snake one quite as well, but it's somewhere between Assotin and Heller Bar, I believe that, or yes, the Snake is shut down up to that point. So the salmon remains open, like up through the Riggins area for steelhead fishing. But like huge guiding community, you know, drift boat guiding community up on the Clearwater is basically just done without a season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's certainly impacting a lot of the guiding community and stuff there in a pretty real way, with people not sure how they're going to put food on their table and all that kind of stuff.
Why did they shut it down, Eric?
There's no fish.
Okay.
Oh. Like fish returns are absolutely abysmal.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there's all sorts of, I mean, the governor created a task force here in the state last year to try and take on that issue and put sort of different, you know, groups together. You've got people from fishing, from environmental groups, river guiding groups, to electric production groups and all that kind of stuff together on this committee, trying to discuss, you know, what do we do? Like where are the real the problem with it is, I think a lot of the debate is really around what's even causing it, which you can't start doing anything to help solve the problem until you can agree on what the causes are. And so, right. it's a pretty heated thing at this moment up here. But I certainly feel bad for those folks down in that boating community, because that's a real tough thing. So that one is a thing that is happening. And then if you find yourself in the McCall area, there is an event this weekend to protest the Stibnite Mine up on the South Fork of the Salmon. It's happening in McCall, and they'll put those details up. I think it's something like middle of the day meeting and then walking down to the park downtown, and being put on by one of the local indigenous tribes, and there are going to be a bunch of events and speakers and things like that. So
That's
if you
great.
find yourself in McCall and want to come protest the mine, the gold mine up on Stibnite in the South Fork, in the tributary to the South Fork of the Salmon, come on down.
So,
Should be
Eric, are you
fun.
going to protest?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I got kid stuff going on. It's my last weekend in town for a while, so if I can make it. But my plan right now is to make it.
Are you going to make a sign?
I'm not very good at making signs.
I really want you to have a sign.
So, but I've got a first grade daughter who's pretty into making signs,
Gonna
so we'll see.
say.
I can see Scout getting into it, so very possible.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. I think it's certainly an interesting time in terms of, like, we seem to be in a time where we're starting to witness the effects of a lot of the things humans have been doing to our watersheds and how that's turning around and impacting us again in negative ways, like less fish and less income. And I think we're just starting to understand the long-term effects of things like dams and mines and effects on water quality, quantity, and all of that. Patagonia just put out a really good film that they showed at Featherfest called Artificial, about some of those effects, specifically around fish hatcheries and how that's impacting native fish populations and returns. I thought it was a really well done film and pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that one's an interesting thing. From what I heard of that film, there's a lot more debate around the reality of those impacts than maybe that film presents. But I certainly think it's an interesting part of the conversation. I will
I
say
think that
you wouldn't have any guided fishing industry without those hatcheries. It's worth
definitely.
pointing out. So.
And one of the guys they interviewed who was a fishing guide talked about that, and it seemed like he also kind of tried to address the conflict he felt if it was found out that that type of industry was impacting native fish. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation. I don't know nearly enough about it, but I'm trying to learn more. All
Cool. Well, should we move on to our main topic, which basically is to talk to our friend Pete from AIR. Pete, you want to go ahead and tell people kind of what your background is and what you do at AIR?
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it. So my background here at AIR is I've been here about 10 years. I used to work in the production department, welding all the seams on the boats, and now I'm in sales and customer service, primarily wholesale for the West Coast, Oregon, Washington, and California. So yeah, that's my background. I know we want to talk a little bit about AIR's background. Is that right?
Yeah,
Yeah, that'd be great.
I think people love to hear that.
Okay,
Yeah.
cool. So 30 years ago, this year's our 30-year anniversary, in 1989, a few of our owners got together, Alan Hamilton, Greg Ramp, and Dennis Hill, from various other boating companies, and paddle sports companies. Alan was the general manager of the NRS, working for Bill Parks back in the 80s. Greg Gramp used to work at Sotar. He designed boats for Moravia, and started Argonaut Inflatables, which is basically the precursor to AIR. They joined up with Dennis Hill, who was one of the original owners of Seattle Sports Dry Bags. So had a lot of guys with a lot of experience. And basically just wanted to make a super tough boat that can be easily repairable, as well as have modular parts. and didn't require any glue, which is still one of the only companies that doesn't require glue in some aspect. So that's basically the history there, the start of it. The idea behind AIR, again, is tough boats, best warranty and customer service. Treat your employees well and treat customers well and get out there and boat.
Yeah, I love AIR. I love you guys. You guys do a great job. I have to say, I think you guys are an amazing company. And you guys do it. Your warranty is unmatched, of course. But I just think the your involvement in the community and just the way you guys treat your employees and interact with the boating world is awesome. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah. And thank you. We appreciate
Zach
hearing that always.
Zach will accept his payment for quid pro quo advertising. I'll give you his address when he gets off the phone.
I am somebody who owns a lot of rafts, and I don't own any AIR rafts. I only have a bunch of the back rafts, so I have no skin in the game here. I just like AIR a lot. And I think one thing that separates AIR that people wonder about is the bladder system. Like, do you want to explain how it works and kind of the advantages of it?
Yeah. So again, you know, we're the only company in whitewater that does it. There's a few companies that do it in smaller fishing boats and stuff. But basically the idea is modular parts that are replaceable, just like, you know, car parts or other things. You can order up a new set, install them, and you know, you don't need any glue for repairs, at least in field repairs. So again, the ideas are tough and replaceable parts. The cool thing about the bladder system is you could tear the outer skin and the bladder will still in some cases not get torn, so you're still floating at least till you can get to shore. And then all you got to do is for an infield repair, say on like a multi-day trip, is just sew up the outer skin. If you do tear the bladder, you just throw a piece of tear aid on it. And that's a permanent enough repair to get you off the river and so you can get the boat back to us for some heat welding. Another advantage is it creates a fairly rigid boat at a lower PSI. And basically it kind of works like a bike tire, you know, with an inner tube in it. Tough outer skin. And it's not the outer skin is not responsible for holding AIR like other brands out there. So again, it goes back to that idea that you can damage the outer skin and still float until you get where you need to go.
Is the outer skin's PVC, right?
Yeah. So pretty much everything we do is PVC skin with a urethane bladder on the AIR stuff. And then a vinyl bladder on our tributary line. And basically it's just a quality difference between the two bladders. But again, everything's all PVC with welded seams. And then the bladders, it's kind of a interesting thing for people that aren't familiar with it. It scares them a little bit, the zippers and stuff and all that. But basically the bladders zip together just like there's a bulkhead in a normal raft. But you know, if it blows out, just swap it out, get a new one, zip it back in. You know, once you become familiar with it, it's a very easy system to work with and repair boats on. And no time for glue to dry if you need to repair. So
there are, you know, one of the things I've heard from people over time is, you know, that you get water that sits in between like the tubes, you know, the internal and external layer, right? Mm-hmm. How important is it that you actually, like, at the end of the season, pull out your inner liner and hang it all up, get everything totally dried out? You know, is that over time, is that really a thing that you have to worry about? Or can you just, you know, use the boat, let it sit out in the sun, and then roll it up and put it away?
Yeah, for the most part, you just sit out in the sun. I mean, that's the way we do it here. We do have, you know, some customers down the southeast where it's a little more humid and moist down there. You know, maybe somewhere like that, you might want to open it up and dry it out a little more. But you don't need to separate the bladder or the skin. I know some of our outfitters up there in the Northwest, they just stand them up in the yard, like over there on the white salmon, and dry them out and roll them up for the year, and really not an issue. You see more of it in the more humid areas or somewhere down like South America and stuff where they might need to get in there and mop some of it out. But for the most part, just dry it up, roll it away for the year. That's what we do with all of our demo fleet here and all of our personal boats as well.
So speaking of water getting in between the tubes and the internal and external layer, I know that you guys do floors where some of your floors, like the water gets kind of into that area between the internal and external. And that's kind of in some ways maybe even part of the design. And then you also do floors that are totally sealed up where that doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Talk to me about like why you guys do two different types of floors and what the advantages are.
So initially it started out with our system because of the internal bladders and skins and the just normal zippers. It kind of was a necessity to go that route. You know, we couldn't really seal it up and offer an internal bladder and an exterior skin, much like, you know, a standard I-beam floor that you see on every other brand. So it was kind of just out of, that's the only way you could do it. And we used to offer a lot of floors that had foam in them rather than a bladder. But basically it does that. And then, you know, some of the function of it is like an aid in tracking. It kind of sticks your boat to the water. But like I said, it aids in tracking, can help with stability in some situations. I mean, you know, obviously you hit something pretty big sideways. It's a little tricky to get out of that and claim that, you know, a floor is going to get you out of that. But I have been in situations where I've been stuck in a little hole that it's a little flippy feeling, but you can kind of feel it suck to it and stick back down. So that's the main function of that regular floor, is aid in tracking, a little bit of stability, and it just kind of sticks to the water and, you know, you're not as squirrely. And then for our other option is called the sealed floor pocket. And what that is a lot more like a traditional wrap floor. So one, we designed that for people that are switching from other brands. And, you know, the bladder thing kind of freaks them out at first. They're not sure about it. So one, to help those customers out. And then another place that works really well, as you know, with other brands or rafts, is that it lightens the boat a little bit. So when we sell a big gear boat or fishermen that want a back row, they don't necessarily need that boat sticking to the water. They either have enough weight to do it, or they want to be efficient back rowing in an eddy. So they go with the sealed floor option. A little faster, you know, some of our raft teams that we sponsored, they go all sealed floor just because it's a little quicker, doesn't quite stick to the water, and they need to make, you know, quick spinning moves and get to the next gate and stuff. So really just a preference thing. My opinion, I wouldn't go with anything other than a regular floor until you get up to like a 16 footer or you are running silty rivers. That's the other benefit of a sealed floor. Silty rivers, you don't let that micro dust from the Grand Canyon, all those desert rivers in, and then a fisherman on the back row and be a little more efficient.
Pete, I've heard a lot of people say the non-sealed floor, the regular floor, keeps the boat from flipping. Basically, the water in the bottom is a ballast, and it kind of creates a suction between the boat and the river. Do you think that's true? Like, would you say these are the least flippy boats? That's the question I'm really asking.
I'm not sure about least flippy. I mean, less flippy than a creature, you know, creature crafts are more or less flippy. But that's a different subject. But, you know, like I said, it does stick to the water a little bit and aids in tracking.
There's like a suction, right? The water being in the floor kind of has a suction with the river.
Yeah, and the main benefit that I see with it is tracking, and like once you get on a line, you know, a nice wave train that, you know, maybe curves through. Like, I don't know, you guys, a few of you probably paddled, you know, like staircase. And once you hit that line, you know, it's a move to get into it and then hold through, but it's a curvy one, you know, and you kind of hit it and you can really stay on top of stuff. You know, obviously you hit a monster hole, doesn't matter what type of floor you got on. But like I said,
but all things equal, exact same raft, exact same hole. I mean, you're a salesperson, so you probably should say yes to this, but people tell me that airboats flip less. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. You know, like I said, it's kind of got a sticky feel to it. You can kind of feel it. Definitely been in some situations where it's like, I'm going over, and then at the last second stops you a little bit. It kind of connects you to the water, connects you to the moving water, you know. So, but yeah, if you're brand new, you know, no experience, definitely buy an air, you won't float.
I get in this discussion with people all the time, and I'm like, I don't know. I think that air, if you don't want to flip, air is probably the way to go. And I just want to hear you say it.
Yeah, you'll never flip.
Awesome. Is that on the warranty?
No.
Like, if you flip, you can return your boat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, if you're not happy with it, we'll always talk to you, see what we can do.
So you brought up foam floors. Mm-hmm. What happened to the foam floor? Like, I think we've got one or two of the double IKs from like way back in the day with the foam floor. Yeah. And to be honest, I kind of love them. Why don't you have them anymore? What happened? What was wrong with it?
The main issue is shipping logistics and warehouse storage. Get to the point where you can't store that much foam around. You know, back in the day when you're only doing 100 drafts a year, maybe. Yeah, it's no problem. But with the volume we do now, the amount of foam storage we'd have in our warehouse as well as shipping, you know, you wouldn't think something light costs a lot to ship, but it's all based off of volume. So you buy the floor would be cheaper. Say it'd be a $150 floor for an IK. The shipping is probably $150 as well. So you get the same thing with a inflatable bladder. Same cost, but, you know, $20 in shipping. So a lot of it was shipping logistics, and then as well warehouse storage was the main
interesting reason. I totally would have thought it was some other reason, like performance related or environmental.
And a lot of people really love the foam floors. They're very rigid. They're really good surfing boats, you know, in an IK or a Super Puma with a nice rigid foam floor, it surfs really well. And like I said, very rigid, you know, there's hardly any bend in it. It's not inflatable. And then the other issue is, you know, the idea behind an inflatable is you can roll it up and put it in the back of your Subaru. With a foam floor, you got to take the freaking floor out every time. So it kind of defeats the purpose of an inflatable. It's like half inflatable.
Yeah,
half
rigid, for sure. Though.
So that's another thing. But again, mostly it was foam storage, foam sourcing, and logistics.
Huh. Interesting.
That's very practical.
Yeah.
I have friends that have some of those thrill seekers with the foam floors, and they swear by them. Like, they've shipped those boats. They shipped those boats out to us on the middle four trips, and the shipping's crazy because the foam floors are a huge box.
Yeah, I watched a dude pack his out of the bottom of the Grand Canyon because he didn't want to come without it.
Yeah.
But, like, packed the foam out.
Yep.
Like, that seems insane. Yeah, cool. What are, you guys have some new products coming up? What's like a cool new thing?
So we got a couple new things. I'll kind of touch on all three of them and then we can go into them a little bit. So first things, we've updated our tributary rafts. So they'll all be one color scheme now. They used to be two different color schemes, blue and gray, or gray and blue. Now they're all blue with gray accents. And then basically just streamline that. One for fleets for outfitters. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, didn't like the gray. And they're also coming all now with the Leafield C7s. So I'm not sure if anyone's familiar with it, but the B7 is a very good air holding valve, but it's kind of a bitch to replace. So everything's all streamlined there. So we're offering the same valves on all our rafts and air rafts, kayaks, cats, and our tributary rafts now. And as far as new products, we've got two this year. The first is the tributary IK Angler. What that is basically a inflatable fishing kayak. You know, it's something that's been growing in popularity like crazy lately. Just hard shell fishing boats everywhere. So it's for that person that really wants to fish from a kayak, but they don't want the hassle of dealing with a big, long, rigid hull boat that's heavy and awkward, and you need a trailer or a car rack to carry it. So again, back to that convenience of an inflatable, they can still get you out and do the same things as, like, say, a hard shell fishing kayak. And then the last thing for this year is the one I'm most excited about, is our Air Cub. It's a 10.5-foot self-bailing raft made right here in the U.S. Basically, it's just a little R2 mess-around playboat, non-diminished tubes, same continuous curve design, same floor design as all our other stuff. Basically, just a super small playboat. It kind of, if you're familiar with like the Highside Mini Max, it kind of mimics that shape. So we're kind of trying to break into that market. We've been having customers ask for that shape, a boat like that, for a long time. We've always had the Tributary 9.5, but now we have this new Air one.
So when you say mimics the Highside boat, it's kind of the same boat.
Yeah. It's kind of the same boat, but it's less blippy, right?
I have to say that's the Highside boat's pretty sweet. I'm excited you guys have one too. I've seen a lot of people R1-ing that. Do you think there's a market for R1?
Oh yeah, yeah. And that's kind of, you know, to be honest, you know, that's something we wanted to go after. They kind of dominate that R1 small 10-foot R2 boat, and so. You know, we have our Puma and stuff, but people want a non-diminished tube, a lot of volume in the bow and stern for resurfacing, something that's really easy to move with one person. We got it out to Portland last winter to Aaron Erdrich out there. You know, all he does is Highside R1. So he really liked it, and there was another guy we sent it to in Ecuador. They did a lot of R1 in there, and it's like, hey, as soon as this comes out, I'm selling my Highside, and I'm going to go with yours.
So isn't Aaron sponsored by Highside? Is he allowed to do that?
I think he got some flack for it. Yeah. he's R2-ing a lot in some airs with all those guys, you know. Anyway, yeah. But
that's what comes
to
mind.
Good tester.
Aaron will be on the trust R1-ing his Highside, whatever they're called, Mini Max, and he's just killing it. And watching him do that, it just sounds fun.
Oh, yeah.
And when I saw your boat come out this spring, because I've been thinking about getting the Highside boat, and I'm excited to see how this Cub does.
Yeah, it's super fun. You know, I'll have one out, you know, next year for Clackfest. Sweet. And if anybody wants to try it, you know, we'll send it out for sure.
Cool. So.
But yeah, it's a super fun boat. We had it down at Gawley a couple weeks ago. Me and Zane, our design engineer, R2'd it down there, and it was super fun.
Sweet. What's up with the back raft? That's my favorite boat that you guys make. How's it? Are you guys making to make more designs? Where are you guys at with the back raft? New colors?
Yeah, there may be some color changes down the line. We're probably still only going to offer it in one color for the time being. You know, still trying to figure that market out. It's a different one for sure. Pack rafting, especially coming from a company that makes, you know, whitewater boats. So it's a little different. For right now, we don't see any new designs to add to the lineup. And no major changes right now. I know you guys use it, you know, on the Chetco and stuff, and you like it for certain things. And there's certain applications that a lot of people really love it. But yeah, it's a good boat. I mean, as you know, we changed fabric and color last year, mostly to alleviate some wear on the exterior stitching. You know, it's now welded, so it's a lot tougher in that respect. I know you've commented that it's a little stickier on rocks, you know?
The new design, yeah. The new fabric.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of funny. It's stickier on rocks, but slicker on, on your butt, you know?
Just run rivers, Zach, that have water in them. It won't be an issue.
Well, I don't know. It's a good idea. I have to say, is there a market for the back raft? Is this like a part of the business that's big, or just kind of a fun project you guys are doing on the side?
It's, you know, it's kind of a kind of a fun project on the side. You know, we were basically outsourced by a guy a few years back to build this. So, you know, as far as a percentage of our business, it's very small. It's very small in general, not just our business, but in Papa Sports in general. It's a very small market. So it's a tough one to get into and kind of take hold of and get a good footing. It's just a little small. You know, it's not, you know, I would say it's like our number one priority. It's been a fun project to work with and an interesting one. And we learn a lot about the type of people that want it, what they want, and making our adjustments along the way. You know, I would say from the start, it's changed so much, even after our release, with help from like you and other customers out that have been trying it. It's evolved a lot and we're still learning. So we're still trying to figure it out. And, like I said, it's not a huge volume of our business, but it's something we still want to go after.
I'm super appreciative that you guys did that. I can imagine being almost a money loser for you guys, and the fact that you put money and time and energy into making those boats, I'm super thankful. You know, I send you guys a lot of messages like, oh, fix this, fix that, I don't like this. But, you know, it's just because I want perfection. But, man, the boat you have, the back raft, is pretty cool. And it opens up a lot of rivers that couldn't be done otherwise, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's been a fun boat. It's fun to paddle. And, I mean, we even basically got one of our newest, most popular designs in our IK series from it. I don't know if you're familiar with the Tributary Spud. But that shape is basically the small back raft built out of PVC and a little bit narrower. So very minimal research and design on that boat as far as design goes, but probably one of our best selling kayaks now. Just learning from the shape of that boat. Spud's the best boat we make, I think.
I don't get me wrong, like I designed a boat with you guys and I love that boat for what we use it for. But for like me, if I'm personally going out and grabbing a boat to go screw around, I'm grabbing a Spud. It is so fun.
I think you've mentioned it on like four podcasts.
Yeah, dude, because it's
or four episodes. I want to try it.
it's super fun. Surf's like a dream. You get a nice little standing wave, glassy standing wave, and it's money.
Nice.
Oh yeah. I was doing like 5-minute surf rides at Kelly's in it. Like it's so fun.
Nice. I have a question. So it seems like there's a few companies in the whitewater industry that don't just make whitewater products. And I've just noticed that they seem to innovate a bit more. So like I noticed that Air has a couple other brands, one being like an industrial supply brand. And I know Jackson sells or uses their factory to make like safety cones and traffic equipment. Cocotat has a military branch. Do you think that, I mean, it seems obvious that doing that is a smart move and allows the industry to innovate a bit more. Was that like a strategic move on Air's side that you're aware of, or is it just something that kind of naturally happened? Like, do you think other companies could branch out into like the industrial sector or other markets and be better off?
Oh yeah. I think, you know, some of it kind of happened, you know, naturally and organically. I know, you know, we have three companies, you know, Air, Outcast Sporting Gear, our fishing division, and then the Air Environmental. It's called Air Environmental now. It used to be called Air Industrial. So changing with the times. So that's a good thing. But yeah, it's allowed us one to, you know, innovate and cross stuff over between all three companies. We learn stuff when we build our industrial environment or spill containment stuff that we can pass over to the whitewater and stuff. We, you know, it can work for all three parts of the company, whether it's a technique, a material, some sort of process, as well as we have some crossover customers that will buy stuff. You know, oh, you got that? Okay, I need a I'd love to have something to wash my, you know, shuttle buses out and not spill oil all over our outposts, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And the other thing it allows us to do is to stay productive and, you know, alive in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our this is the way one of our owners likes to explain is we got a stool that's got three legs. You know, a stool without three legs it doesn't stand up very well. So we're able to employ our core team of production, shipping, and repair guys throughout the year, where in the past, before the three divisions, you know, you'd see some layoffs and a lot of turnover in the off season. Even though you are building the inventory, it's hard to keep things going when you're not selling rafts in the winter.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is useful. I know, you know, a lot of companies can't necessarily, you know, they're smaller and they can't necessarily expand in that way, but it seems like, you know, there's a number of conversations where people are like, well, why don't we have, you know, a larger, when it comes to hard shell kayaking, why is there not a larger hard shell kayak that exists? Or why is there not a better XYZ that exists in the whitewater market? And it seems that some of these companies that everyone loves are limited by the margins that you make and the seasonality of whitewater in general. So it seems like the only way to expand the sport, whether it's hard shell kayaks or dry suits or rafts or whatnot, is to ensure that you're able to employ people year round and make money on things outside of the whitewater industry. So it seems like AIR has done a really good job of that. And it seems like as a result, they've been innovating a lot more than other raft companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, you can employ those people year round you know, we get a lot of ideas from even, you know, our production guys, repair guys and stuff that, you know, because they're there year round, even in just improving techniques and, skill, you know, we're always going to have really high quality stuff because we're the same people working around on it. Quality controls there, and it allows us to innovate when we can keep our business running for a full year, you know, and, having all different sorts of projects, and it just kind of offshoots to everything we do, being able to stay going throughout the year.
Yeah, awesome.
So we talked a little bit about like the back raft, you guys doing that. And, you know, over the years, it seems like there's always kind of a trend, like something is really popular, or like the industry is headed towards something. You know, for a while it was like stand up paddle boards were the hottest thing. Like everybody was making them, everybody was buying them. You know, now it seems like kind of from the outside that like the hot thing is inflatable fishing crafts or, you know, fishing kayaks on the hard side. But it seems like everybody's making some sort of a lightweight inflatable fishing boat. Mm-hmm. What, you know, is from someone who's in the industry, what is like, what's the hot thing right now? What do you think the next hot thing is? Like what's coming?
You know, like you said, you're spot on. That's what we're seeing is fishing kayak is huge right now. They've got all these different trade shows and seems like every hard shell guy has more fishing kayaks in their booth than hard shells. You go to Jackson, Piranha, you know, there's all these other companies and fishing kayaks are probably, there's probably more of them at these trade shows than I've definitely seen in the past. You know, like you said, it was SUP and those have kind of died off and tapered off, plateaued. But yeah, the fishing kayak is huge and you're seeing more inflatable fishing kayaks. Again, for the weekend warrior or that, you know, guy that doesn't want to have a big rack or a trailer for his hard shell. You know, it's lightweight, portable, and that's kind of where we're at. You know, like I said, we developed a fishing kayak for this year. It comes in, it's 35 pounds. Comes complete with a padded foldable seat. Something we call the integrated gear system, which is sleeves with that you can mount Scotty rod holders and anchors and motor mounts to all over your boat
just like a hard shell fishing kayak, but then at the end of the day, you can pull up to your, you know, you could put it in a Mini Cooper or a Prius and you know, still out there fishing. So that's one of the biggest trends we've seen. Something we're really trying to go after as well.
Did I see you guys make a fishing raft that is frameless, basically? Like, yeah. It's all, the whole thing in plates with, along with, like, you know, the thing that if you're a fishing guy, you stand against in the front, like everything is totally.
Yeah. So we have, we've had a couple of those. The lightweight fishing, frameless stuff, again, portable, ease of use. We do have fully inflatable. We have two of them. One of them was fully frameless. You know, all it has is oar stands that are bolted to, it's kind of that same idea, integrated gear system I was talking about, basically oar stands, just that mount to the side tubes, inflatable lean bar for the front angler. And basically, you know, you can ship it in one box minus the oars and, throw it in the back of your car, blow it all up. You know, you don't have to rig up a frame. You don't have to have a trailer. And then we have another one, a 10-foot raft that has basically some seat bars and some, you know, rigid folding seats. So very minimal frame use on that. But that boat's 100 pounds. It fits in the back of a pickup, fully inflated. Great for one fisherman and one rower. Same inflatable lean bar. And that's all part of our Outcast Sporting Gear fishing division.
Wow. I love your guys' innovation. The one thing I really want to hear about is this boat that Eric, you guys developed with them. Like, how did that come about? Did it work? What was the process like?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about it from our end. Is, you know, we were interested in trying some new things and got talking with these guys about what that could look like and their manufacturing capabilities and everything else. And it just seemed like a great fit. And so we went through, I don't know, four or five, about three, at least three, maybe four prototypes, I think, of design, you know, trying some things and, you know, take it out in the river. And it's like, okay, we need to give it more rake and we need to change this and just little stuff. But it was really fun. And what we came out with at the end of the day has been awesome. Like, couldn't be happier. You know, as we've used it 1 year, we've learned some things, but that's one of the fun things about it, is sort of evolving as we go.
So you guys used it this season?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. We bought enough to use on like one section of river. So we used them on the Rogue like full time. So basically everybody on the Wild Rogue with us this year was in those boats, was in airs. And yeah, they've been awesome.
It's always fun working on a project like that, especially with people that really know what they want and know what is actually possible. Not creating a unicorn boat is what we call it. You know, you guys have a specific function and a need, and you came to us, and it was easy on our end, and I think it was easy on your end as well.
Well, we maybe had a few unicorn boats that we eventually backed off of, but, you know.
So. Yeah, Zane's good at saying no to some things.
Yeah, he had no problem. It was pretty straight-faced, like, nah, not doing that.
He said no to me a bunch. I have all these ideas. He's like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Eric, is it going to be a boat that the public can buy, or is this an Orange Torpedo only thing?
Unclear. We're unsure.
Yeah. Once warranty runs out on theirs, I don't know what they're going to do, but we're only selling them to Orange Torpedo. Their design and their boat. That's where we're at on it.
I love that. Yeah. I think that's so cool. I wish we were big enough to have a boat that was only ours. I love the exclusivity of it. Someday, that's my goal, is to design a boat that only I can buy.
Well, I mean, you've designed boats with wing that probably only you will buy.
I mean, that's different. That's purely because I'm the only one that wants that boat. I want the boat where people are clamoring for it. I'm like, nope, can't get it.
So I have another question. So I have a Rock to Bomb inner tube, which is awesome and super fun. the something I noticed, because at Clackamas River Fest, they have the inner tube mass start race, which is also hilarious and awesome. But I'm not a super small person, but compared to my husband, my arms kind of struggle to get over the tubes. Have you ever considered making like a slightly smaller version, or like a rock to bomb medium or something?
A unicorn?
Yeah.
For Priscilla, here's what Priscilla's asking. Will you make me a unicorn so I can win the inner tube race at Clackfest?
Basically. Well, but no, I was thinking like maybe, you know, kids probably, if they wanted to paddle in it, might benefit from it too, or, you know, whatnot.
Yeah, I haven't thought about it much. And, you know, you're talking to reigning Clack champion in the tube race, so I don't know if I want to do that. But, you know, it hasn't come up, but we're always looking for new stuff. Interestingly enough, we've been looking at a larger one for rental companies.
Yeah. You know,
they tend to have some...
like the easy floater?
Yeah, some more robust guests. So they need a little bit bigger tube.
Yeah.
But now that talking about it, you know, for some reason it's never crossed our mind. But I'm going to definitely bring that up. So
Yeah, you could have like a large, medium... Or yeah. Large, medium, small, well,
I think it would be a great idea. You know, we said smaller, you know, our Spud kayak did so well when we decided to go smaller. You know, there's no reason that one for kids or even smaller adults that you can actually paddle and not just float around in. So.
Totally.
It'll cut down on drag.
Then I can beat Zach.
You've beat me before. That race is all about the start. You literally, once you get in order... You're in that order. It's about the start
and not flipping over.
That race is infuriating because you do the start and there's nothing you can do to go faster than anybody else. You're just fodder, and you hope the person in front of you flips.
So great.
What tube have you been in, Zach? Have you been in an air yet?
I haven't tried the air one. Do you think the air one's faster?
I don't know. Mine was pretty fast.
Yeah. No.
I think they're faster.
I'll take whatever I can get. Like when I walk through the main Clackfest area, like who will let me borrow a tube? And that's the one I'm taking.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
Yeah. So I probably have done an air one before.
Well, I'll make sure to bring some more if you're out there again.
Awesome. Well, we're winding out our time here. But we usually like to end with gear of the week, something that, you know, we love or is a new piece of equipment we're using or something like that. Pete, is there anything that you just, like, you won't go on a river trip without, or you think is, like, your secret sort of special thing that, you know, is just awesome that you take on every trip with you? Like, what's something you love when you go on a river trip?
I'm trying to think here.
We can come back to you. We can hit Priscilla first.
Yeah, actually had one this time. Didn't have to come up with it. So my gear of the week is Alps roll table, which is not, I would say, if you don't take care of gear and are used to just kind of like throwing it around, it's probably not a good option for you. But it's the small version is under $30. I think it's a great size for car camping, with especially if you just have like two people or one person and smaller raft trips. It's made out of aluminum, so it's super lightweight, and it's super easy to assemble. So I mainly like this one just because of the cost compared to other rolly tables. If you don't want to get super awesome, durable, like raft setup, this is a great alternative. So long as you're willing to like take care of it and not throw it around or whatnot.
That take care of it piece is pretty critical. I bought two because they're really clean looking, like they're really cool and you can keep them clean. Like they're great. So I bought a couple to try and like see about replacing roll tables because they just get like haggard looking. They lasted like 4 days.
They don't work commercially.
Before they broke. Yeah.
Definitely not a commercial
for private use. If you're careful with your stuff, they're rad.
Yeah.
This is sort of like Eric's best mediocre raft from a few weeks ago when you suggested that Star Rafts as a gear of the week. Like, this is the, so you're saying this is the best mediocre table out there?
Well, I haven't tried all the mediocre tables, but okay. I've had mine for 3 years now, and so long as we're doing like a car camping trip where our car isn't totally full with people and we have space, I always throw it in because most of the places we're camping don't have like camp tables. And it's just so nice to be able to put your stove on a table or, you know, your coffee press or whatever. So I've certainly, I feel like I've gotten, see, $10 a year. I feel like I've gotten my use out of it so far, and it's still kicking.
But imagine if there's a table out there that was $8 a year.
There could
sounds
be
like, one. Sounds like we're on the hunt.
Yeah.
Email us with your cheap tables. They're amazing.
I'm all about the cheap dirt, like the cheap gear that works for like the individual, because I'm always on a budget.
Yeah. I can go next.
Yeah, go for it, Zach.
Mine's kind of a soapbox. It's kind of gear. It's non-diminishing tube drafts. I am pretty positive that the only reason that diminishing tube rafts exist are, one, to shove more people in a raft, two, to get people more wet, and three, to save money on material costs for the manufacturers. So I'm going to make the case that that non-diminishing tube rafts are superior.
Okay.
Pete, what do you got for me there?
I don't know. I think they're all good. You know, if you're rigging up and framing up for a full day or a week trip, I would definitely lean towards a non-diminished tube raft as well. Carry more shit. Some diminished tube rafts. I mean, Super Puma is probably my favorite boat ever. Agile, fast, and
yeah, it's a good boat.
It's rowdy. So I think, yeah, there's places for it, for both.
Is there a name for non-diminishing tube rafts that's not just not like a regular raft, or do we have to call them non-diminishing tube rafts?
We don't have a name. I mean, we have one that's, you know, the R is our round series. It's non-diminished, but so is our E series. So I think it is called non-diminishing.
It always sucks to be defined by what you're not.
It's kind of like private boaters. The BLM calls them non-commercial boaters.
And they love that. I'm more with Pete on this one. I think that it depends on what you're doing. There's a time and a place for each boat.
If you're running whitewater, diminishing tubes don't help you. That's my point.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't take like a R boat down the Green Trust, but I would take a D diminishing tube in my one experience on there. Just a bitch to move. But that's my opinion.
Cool. That's the feedback I want right there.
Interesting. We'll have to come back to this one. This sounds like a lovely conversation.
Yeah.
My gear of the week is, I just got one, the Oclu camera. So it's OCLU. And they just came out. It's kind of like a slightly cheaper, well, it's not that much cheaper, but a little bit cheaper version of like the new GoPro.
Hmm.
One of those kind of, you know, perspective cameras. And so far, like, I haven't gotten to do a lot with it, but the little bit I've done has been the quality of it, like the menu, usability, the app connection on your phone and its usability, the quality of everything has been totally there with all the GoPros I've used. You know, I think that the stabilization probably isn't quite as good as the brand new GoPro, but it's as good as like the last generation of GoPros for sure.
Nice.
So, it's a little bit cheaper, which is nice. I think it was like, a decent amount cheaper actually than the new GoPros. So I'm pretty into it so far. I'll report back once I've used it on a bit more stuff, but at first glance with a couple test runs so far, it's been as good as any GoPro I've used. So Pete, you have any gear you want to share?
Yeah, I do. First, since I'm at work, I got to plug something. So I'll do the small Air Frodo bag. Basically, it's a day size, a day dry bag, zipper top function, T-zip, like a lot of the dry suit manufacturers are using. You know, ultra dry, easy to get into. You clip it to your frame. Just a very easy day bag to take along. And basically everyone here has one. And I'll recommend those all day.
Oh, nice.
One of my favorite products.
Yeah, I just looked it up. That looks awesome.
Wait, it's called the Frodo bag?
Yeah.
Like Frodo Baggins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the Hobbit.
Named after Sean. if you know him, he worked here and he's Hobbitish. So,
yeah. It's awesome.
That's Alan gave him that nickname years ago. So.
I love that you guys called it that.
Yeah. So
I got that. And then I was at Palo Sport Retailer and I tried on the Kokatat Hustler life jacket. And it's the most comfortable thing I've ever put on, I think. So, something to look at for next year.
Is that the new one that's a copy of the Astral jacket?
Yeah, kind of. Kind of got the front pocket, but yeah. It's like memory foam, the straps, what it feels like.
Huh.
Very comfortable.
Cool. But it's not out yet, right? Still, we're going to see it in a few months.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I got.
Cool.
Right on. Since you brought up small zipper dry bags, question. Do you guys make a dry bag, a dry bag that's a zip dry bag that has like a flap or something over the zipper? My issue with zipper dry bags is that, like, say I was in the middle of a Grand Canyon trip and my zipper decides to crap out. Mm-hmm. It's like there's nothing you can do. You're just sort of stuck with a dry bag that no longer works.
That is
true. It's all. I've always wondered if someone was going to make one that just like they just put a flap that like clips over or something, like something that is a at least splash proof backup, like that's built onto the exterior of the bag. Do you guys have such a thing?
We don't yet, but that is an excellent suggestion.
Something I like the yet part.
Definitely like to bring that up because Grand Canyon, that thing's going to take some abuse if you're not, if you didn't bring your T-zip lube, you might have some trouble. And then if it fails, you need a backup at least.
So. Yeah. So I've had some zippered bags in the past, and I've had one blow out on a trip, and it's like never again. So,
yeah.
I would love to see something like that. So, gear of the week in the future will be the Air zipper dry bag with a flap or something over the back for backup.
Nice.
That's right.
Awesome. Well, anything else? Zach, Priscilla?
No, Pete, thanks for taking time to talk to us. It's
thank you.
Good to hear this stuff straight from you instead of, there's always people talking about rafts. We talk about stuff on the show that isn't always true. So it's good to hear from the source.
Yeah, definitely. No, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. It's a good opportunity and glad to talk some air stuff with you.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks for hanging out and listening. Hopefully you were headed somewhere to go do some boating. Winter is arriving and winter boating should start here pretty soon. Tell your friends about us, subscribe, listen wherever you listen. I don't know, all that kind of stuff. Shoot us emails. If you didn't like what we said, tell us. If you liked what we said, tell us. Send us things about your cheap tables. We want to know. TheRiverTalkPodcast@gmail.com. All right. Guys, we'll see you next time. Thanks. Gonna float me into a new state of mind. I'm on Chattahoochee.